he's right here, so. Oh, we topped it. He cold topped it.
Okay. Ready to go. Yeah.
Eight iron.
Oh, we shanked it. Oh, look at that line, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, boy, is he out of sync.
Just before we start this podcast, I just want to have a message from one of our sponsors. One of our main sponsors is Apeiron Clothing, where you can get premium golf wear at discounted prices. Check out our website at www.apeiron-clothing.com. Enjoy the podcast.
If anyone is interested in playing in the Fantasy Golf League, you know, there's still time. We have the monthly competitions, don't we?
We do.
And what are majors. What are we giving away for the US Open? We always give an extra prize, don't we?
The new blue polo.
New blue polo, yeah. If you win this week, top point scorer, you get a blue polo. If you've already ordered one, then you can pick something else off the website. Welcome back to another episode of the Bogey Boys podcast.
You're joined here by your hosts, Kevin and Mark. As always, this is season 3, episode 20, Taylor's Triumph.
Hey, golf's fucking mad at the minute.
Golf's mad. Even playing golf, man, you haven't played this weekend, have you?
No.
You've been away on a stag do.
Yeah. You might have to take the reins on this pod. I'll take this coffee in the
corner.
Do
you know what? I was so close to going as well, but then I seen it was like the club champs net. So although you need a load of shots, really, it was just nice to have it was just a different feeling to like play medal off the blues. It's not nice about it, really, actually.
The Blues are longer form be all long, as well, aren't they?
Yeah, nearly like 7-1. But it was rolling.
Did you play 36 in one day or
Saturday, Sunday, yeah. Usually week. Do you know what? I played the 12th 5 over, you know, for the 2 days.
It's been getting you that all, hasn't it?
But from the middle of the fairway both times.
You struggled on that one, haven't you?
I struggled on that all, don't know why. Need a different strategy, I think.
Didn't you snap up one in the tree out of bounds?
I know. Don't know what's up with me on
that. What happened on this out 5 over? What did you do this time?
I think the last 5 times I've played that, I've had double, triple.
Do you know what, though, when we played that 300-500 game, you struggle with your fat and chips now, ain't you?
I hate it. It's just something.
Yeah, you're struggling, aren't you?
It's, do you know what happened, right? It was mad because it was so bouncy for me all, yeah. If you hit the green, you were stopping dead. If you missed the green by a yard, it was bouncing like it was hitting a car park.
Oh, because he'd watered the greens.
He got the greens soaking, but everything, like, on the 5th, I hit 5-iron, and it went, like, 245 yards. And then I hit 5-iron into the green, and it just pitched and spun back. Like, went pitch, you know, like, one bounce and stopped.
So what's your shooting total?
I shot, like, 83-78, 2 rounds.
And what one?
2 over net.
Yeah,
you fell off 16, he shot, like, 90-90 or something, you know what I mean? Or whatever, 87-90, whatever that net is with the fucking 16 shots. It's just too hard, isn't it? When you
How's your chipping going? Because you went to see Mark Hyde, didn't you?
Yeah, so do you know what me chipping? I still haven't got the bottle to take me chipping. Like because obviously David teaches like hand forward, hold, and you know, strike the ball. Whereas Mark Hyde at SNA teaches the hitting the ball with the back of the club, sort of like that Mike Timpson at
Hailstone
that I went to see, popping the ball up, using the bounce and like flicking the wrists at it and like letting the club do all the work. But he wants you to feel the club, the weight of the club in your wrists, and then flicking the wrist through, not a cock, but more of like a, on the angle of the hinge. So just like hinge it through the ball and pop it up. And like in practice, and when I've been like having a little knock or like on the green with Hardy, I can do it, but if I don't get it quite right, it can bounce and get a bit thin, and all the chips I was like facing had water like long, so I was like back to my little pitching wedge, just
safety first.
But then a couple of chips where I had no fear of like going long, I just like popped it up, couple of bounces, jizzed, and just like stopped there by the hole.
So when you were having a go, it was actually working.
It's a boss technique. Not even under pressure, just with the consequences being like so severe in meddling. And
well, when you reverse it back to your old technique, did you hit a good chip?
Yeah, like? I was hitting good chips, but more like little bumping runs. Like I got up and down a couple of times, but it just wasn't like I probably could have. Like one of them on the 6th, I was on the right hand side of the green, and like there's a big slope on the right, and I probably could have really chipped over the first hill and let it bounce and roll down to the pin. Like, that was like the shot if with Hardy's technique. Because the lie was a bit burn, I had nothing to go over. I just sort of hit a pitching wedge. Like, and then it's missed the first hill anyway. Hit the second hill, and because it had no control or spin, it's rolled to like 25 foot and I've missed it. And I was thinking, oh, do you know what? That was
perfect,
that's me, that.
Yeah.
And that was my fault, that.
Yeah.
And like, but then where he's with the pitching from like 100 yards and in, I've probably lost 30 yards. But he wants you to take the wrist out completely, like what Bryson does, like flat all the way and then keep it straight. Like, literally use your whole
body on top,
your
of
arm
it.
As the club, and then use the body. But you, the way that the strike comes off, you want some of the spin that I was getting. Like, it was...
Well, because you're keeping the club head square the whole time.
Yeah, or the speed that you're putting through, or because you're hitting it with the body. I don't know what generates the spin, like, but it's a lot more spinny than, like, remember that? Remember when we played the SNA and I dug that shot in?
Yeah.
When I drove, it's a good drive. That was the catalyst there for me to go and see him and think something's up here.
Yeah.
Because I was caught between two techniques, whether to flick it or whether to use David's technique. But then, obviously, now Hardy's solidified that popping it with the wrists is like what people are doing at the minute. And it's like a new age sort of technique. Like, you see, like, Alex Buchner and that on Instagram, like, where he gets Mansell on that to step into the shot.
Yeah.
That sort of technique now, like, I feel like once I've grained it and adopted it, it is the better philosophy.
Yeah.
That's how you chip as well, though, isn't it?
It is. That's how I've always chipped. Yeah, I've always been a field goal for me. The problem I've got is you just explain the technique of how you do it. Like, I probably could have explained that 10, 15 years ago, but I've just forgot what the technique is. But because I've always been used to doing it.
You still do it?
Yeah. I used to always go and see Jim Payne. And Jim used to always teach that philosophy as well.
Yeah, well, obviously Hardy's the assistant to Jim, really, isn't he? So whether Jim's told him that or whether he's adopted it from somewhere else. But when the good thing about what Hardy does, which David does the same thing as well, like, they demonstrate it, like, they practice what they preach.
Yeah.
And they chip well. So, like, both philosophies are probably good. But I just think David thinks that them wrists are a little bit too...
inconsistent.
Yeah, but even when you were saying Tiger's a picker.
Yeah.
This is the same thing. Like, Hardy saying you want to get 50 chip shots from the same piece of grass. Like, you want to just be just clipping
no
under it.
Yeah.
No divot, flick, like, getting it popping up.
Yeah.
And, like, it was, do you know what? Me chipping, I've bottled a few of them over the weekend, but the actual pitching technique, I got up and down from inside 100 yards 3 times.
No,
and I'm talking it, and it's like, 60 yards, it's like 4 foot, knocked it in for birdie, like, drive a 3-wood into the ditch on 18 at 115 yards in, no wrist, just full shot, bounce to like fucking 2 foot. Nearly held me shot on 15 as well for a 2 on the hardest, no, on Formula, the hardest hole.
Which one's 15, is it?
Yeah, the big one. The
Before the par 3?
Before the par 3, yeah. I've hit this shot and I put it to like 4 inches, like it was close, like standing ovation from the people on the tee, and the fella after it was like, this guy we played with was like, do you know what, I'm gonna put it in my golf WhatsApp chat and everything, your shot on 15, that was fantastic.
Yeah.
And I was like, yes, right, tell me that again.
I love this positivity.
But yeah, it was a good day.
You went and seen Tim as well, didn't you? Tim Ford.
Yeah, I went and see Tim Ford. Yeah, got it.
The yardages, wasn't it,
doing a gapping session, just because he got me to take the wrists out. I've lost a bit of distance, so I wanted to, like, work out what my wedges were doing from, like, hip, shoulder, rib, full, and just see what thing you're... So he's took the full shot away. He said, if you're going to hit the full shot, you might as well club up and just hit the rib, because the control, like, I was landing it, like, with me 58, little shoulder one, I was just hitting 59.9 yards, 59.8 yards, 59.7 yards. Tim was like, you've, like,
It does show you, though, like, what you're saying there, you know, you've went and seen Mark Hyde to get your technique sharpened up or changed. Then you've went to see Tim for a gapping session, and then you've went out on Saturday. And although you've not trusted some of them, like, when you have it, put it in, you knew, I've got, what, say 80 yards here, I'm going to hit this shot, and then you're sticking it to 80 yards, 83 yards, and it's a hard thing to do that.
Well, yeah, I've literally, like, the what I found with the little pitches from inside 100 yards, there's just so much more because you're taking them wrists out, the wrist, you can get all mad different speeds and different flicks and different, like,
it's that, like, is my major problem. Like, you know, you see me off the tee when I'm not swinging it well and I'm not getting through the ball, like, because I am so wristy through impact, the ball can just go like 50 yards either way.
Exactly. And that takes, like, Hardy was even saying, he was like, do you know what? You're hitting these pitches that good. He's like, I wouldn't be against you doing this in your full swing, to be honest. And I was like, oh, maybe down the line. Like, I'm hitting it all right at the minute. But yeah, it was just good to have a, like, do you know what? I've never hit so many balls off the tee as well because the rough's so long before me all.
That's you the thing hit one, meddling, and
you're like, oh, like, there's no point in running
it
back.
It turns like a 4-hour round. It's like 5.5 yeah. hours long out there.
It was, no, we were first off on the Saturday and I was second to last off on the Sunday. So it wasn't, it was all right.
Yeah, yeah.
But like,
because that can happen in medals. It happens. Oh,
definitely. Especially if you're looking for balls all the time and you're back to tee and all that. But I was literally on some of my three off the tees. I just went to my bag and just grabbed a ball, whatever that was there, both times, brand new Pro Vs, both times. You know, when you're like, eat your provisional and it goes like worse than your first one. And you go, oh, I found my first one. But I've lost two balls. It was like, just like throwing £8 down the drain for no reason. I was like, what am I doing?
Well, you
here?
Lost both provisionals.
Yeah.
Fuck's sake.
Because they were a hell of a lot worse than my first one. But both times, my first one was sound, but it's just the fear of losing the ball.
Yeah.
It is another one.
I would say the rough's up as well, is it?
Oh, mate. When I say up, I mean like...
It's because of this weather, that?
Yeah, it's lazy-ass greenkeepers is what it is. Some of it, honestly, knee-height.
Was it?
In mad spots, like you've seen it, between like 8 and 9 by the green, yeah. 9 and 3, the side of 15. It was just, it's... The trees are bad enough. It's like, it shouldn't be there.
Yeah, you've got trees, water, and thick rough. Stupid. And length.
Well, even on the first, a good 5 yards, or say 3 yards from the ditch, there's knee-high rough.
Yeah.
So, like, it stops your ball from going in the ditch. So I hit one left after first, and I was like, do you think I could have made the ditch? And I was playing with the fella. He's like, no, I reckon it's in the rough. It's another one. I was like, right, well, fair enough. It's another one. I was like, if I hit this provisional, there's no way it can be water. So I'm like, I was trying to like say, like, really, like, I believe that's bounced into the water here. So I want to go up there and take a drop. Anyway, he's having none of it. This fella's on the handicap committee and having none of it. So it's another one. Found my second one. It, you know, wrist pitching was 30 foot, knocked it in for a bogey. I was like, that's a birdie, that in my eyes. Like, let's go. But yeah, and it was a good couple of days, like, loads of birdies, just loads of doubles as well, which is a qualm.
Yeah. It can happen though, can't it?
Yeah.
You're not Tiger Woods, mate.
No, of course, yeah. But
hey, another victory in the red polo as well. Crofty,
I know.
Yeah, smashing it.
See, I put do not buy this polo because you were in serious danger of winning a golf tournament.
I'll have to try and fit into it, mate. Might win one.
Sold a few polos over the weekend. The blue and red ones are a lot of people seem to be liking them.
Flying now, yeah. We've had great feedback from them.
No, which is very positive.
Still
like,
got the Bogey Boys 10 discount code as well for 10% off anyone who's listening to the podcast and wants to purchase, go on the website. And as I say, I'm sure you'll enjoy it. We took our time to get them right, haven't we?
And 1,000,000%.
That's
yeah.
Being worth it. Like, yeah. So,
oh, definitely, yeah.
Oh, but did we mention Chappie winning as well the other week? And Tim Ford told him on. We did, didn't we?
Yeah, I think we did, yeah. So yeah, it's all happening. Everyone's loving it, yeah.
Mm. Andrew Haswell's just won the latest Nord of the Merit as well.
Oh, Skirk, yeah. Hometown or home club home pressured club as well. Pressure, just yeah. Took it on and beasted it.
Playing very well. And he goes and sees Hardy as well, doesn't he?
He goes and sees Hardy, yeah.
Yeah.
He goes and sees that Jordan Massey as well up at the Mia. I've seen a few people with him.
The putter.
Yeah,
putter coach,
the putting coach, yeah. So
yeah, yeah.
It's good. But, what's golf news, chatting?
Well, just like I said at the beginning of the podcast, golf's just fucking mad, isn't it?
Mad.
At the minute with the Live PGA Tour Major week.
It is though, isn't it? It's like, obviously, it was never going to be a walk in the park, was it? Just coming in and trying to take over golf. So there's loads, obviously we've done an emergency pod on what we thought and what was happening at the time, but there's a few new details have emerged,
yeah,
haven't they?
Yeah, they've come out now.
Congress have come to try and pass a bill to stop it being a for-profit, to take away the non-for-profit status.
Ah, okay.
And then the Senate have opened up an investigation into the takeover, talking about like the roots of the money, the sports washing, the rest of it all, like they wrote a big letter to Jay Monahan about like...
Has it gone that deep, yeah?
It's gone deep, yeah. It's gone to like the US Senate and that, yeah, it's major. You've been under a rock in Benidorm, haven't you?
I have, yeah.
So we are, this isn't like...
Phone off, cold beer in hand.
This isn't like me saying I was right, but it sort of is.
Go on.
So a few details that have emerged, right? The PGA Tour spent $100 million of its reserve fund and 50 million on the lawsuit and 50 million on purses and the elevated events.
Oh, this is what you're talking about where
when I was talking about if they ran out of money, yeah. So, like, if they're using that much of his reserve funds,
yeah,
it looks like what I was saying could have been.
And wasn't there something in the news about the litigation as well as costing a fortune?
Well, that's it. It's the same thing. Yeah, that's where the 100 million sort of gone. And they believe that they would lose the battle in court and it could have dragged out for 3 or 4 years. So I just don't think they could afford that. That Jimmy Dunn, I've never really heard of him, but I've seen loads of people quoting.
And he's done an interview as well, hasn't he? And I've seen a couple of things on Twitter about.
So he actually reached out to the PIF April the 11th, yeah. And then the final agreement was reached on the 30th of May, but it's just a framework, no specific details or valuation. So they didn't actually know what was going to happen. They still don't know what the full details. So they've merged and announced it.
Yeah.
And then now they need to like work it all out.
I wonder why though. Why have they just announced it then?
Well, this is what I mean. I think it was the money. It's like the DP World Tour also spent 15 million on legal fees to try and battle it, which has gone down the swanny. Where it's like that could have went to purses. Do you know what I mean? They're paying for 2 million purses.
Well, this is where it gets a bit silly, isn't it? Because you know, as golf fans, we want to just see the best players play week in, week out.
Of course, yeah.
You know, you're right, that 15 million could have went to, you know, an extra, we've got a couple of 2 million, 3 million pairs, haven't we? Bumped them up to 3 or 4, 5 million.
Well, even like, I was watching we'll come on to the Canadian Open in a minute, as we always do. The atmosphere, like the ice rink that they had, the mic and players up, just the PGA Tour as a product, you're like, yeah, it's boss, you know what I mean? And then I was watching the highlights of the Scandinavian Mixed, and it was all like civilized clapping and, oh, great shot and all that. And it's like, golf's past that clapping great shot gear now, isn't it? Golf's like entertainment sport, beer on the pitch and that, isn't it? It's like
music festival.
That's what's expected now. So a couple of things that Jimmy Dunn as well, again, said that the players who were loyal to the PGA Tour will get a stake in and receive equity in the new for-profit organisation.
See, do you know what, right? This is me bust as well, so I'll talk briefly about it now. But obviously, me bust in general is just how crazy golf's gone. But like, people wanting compensating for turning down Liv and staying loyal to the PGA Tour. The PGA Tour all of a sudden hasn't like gone worse or disappeared. It's still the PGA Tour.
Yeah, but if you turn down 300 million and then all of a sudden the players are coming back with all hundreds of millions.
Yeah, but it's all right saying that now, but the risk that they took, there was no guarantee that Liv was going to be good.
No, of course,
you took that money and your career could have been finished.
Yeah, no. Yeah,
so, right. So it's a massive risk for the Liv guys to take to go over to earn all that money.
No, I know.
That's just...
But I think this is just the general consensus, even like Rory.
Who's getting compensated?
Everyone who turned down money, like John Rahm, Matsuyama, whoever else, everyone.
Or all the ones who didn't.
Apart from Rory, because he's a little bitch. See, the Liv executive come out and said that.
No, did he?
One of the Liv executives come out and said, finally, we get to see John Rahm and Hideki Matsuyama playing on teams in Liv. He said everyone would want to see this, and everyone, there's a place on a team for everybody apart from Rory because he's a little bitch. Quote, unquote. It's like, but like, Rory just needs to like go somewhere and just stop speaking, and that's the end of that.
Yeah,
because he doesn't suit being the player advisory fella. He's got no, he doesn't. He's too emotional for one, and for two,
it's the emotional. That's a good way of describing that, because like the way he come out and went, I still hate Liv. I hate Liv. But
I hope it goes away.
But like, what is so bad about Liv? I don't get it.
It doesn't
impact his ability.
But he said
to
it was
play.
Great for the game of golf a few weeks ago, didn't he? Come on.
Liv does not impact Rory McIlroy's ability to go and turn up the RBC Canadian Open and win.
Exactly.
It doesn't impact his ability to go and play in the Ryder Cup. It doesn't impact his ability to try and win majors.
It's like they announced the thing when Rory was like going for three in a row on it. Like, it's like last year when he won the Canadian Open, he was like
one more than someone else.
And then like, they've like, this was around about the time when Liv sort of emerged.
Yeah.
And then like now, it's like Rory's going for three in a row. Let's do his head in and get in there. But again, we'll talk about it in a minute. But another thing, there was in the player meeting, because obviously the player meeting was after our pod, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
There was a 90-10 negative to positive split for Monahan staying on as commissioner.
I think because he said so many things and then basically by signing this deal, he's basically gone back on the majority of things.
He's literally full on U-turned.
And who was it? Grayson Murray and Rory had a bit of a beef, didn't he? And
well, I think Grayson, even Rory came out.
Rory turned around and said, just play better.
Play better, yeah. And he said, hold him to fuck off. But like,
I said this on our emergency pod last week. The one good thing that can come out of all of this is genuine rivalries.
Yeah.
And do you know, like, when you go and watch a boxing fight, and I know they're not going to fight on the golf course, but like,
I reckon that Grayson would have a go. You know, he's rough and ready, him.
But obviously, Patrick Reed and Rory had that beef. Rory refused to shake his hand, and then they had that, like, really good event in Dubai, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Was it Abu Dhabi? It was Dubai, wasn't it?
Dubai, I think.
Yeah. And
Teagate.
Yeah. So, you know, like, rivalries is what builds sport up, especially from a promotional perspective.
Oh, 90%,
as I say, we'll
yeah.
come on to the RBC later, but the fact that, like, Rose, Lowry, Hatton all came out in support of Tommy in the playoff, and then you had Corey Connors, Mike Weir, Adam Hadwin all coming out in support for Nick Taylor.
Yeah.
And, like, it really was. I know Canada and the English and European lads don't play in a match against each other, but it was like a radical President's Cup type.
And like, all the fans were there, like, round the green and all that. Well, as I say, we'll come on to that. Might as well come on to it now. Might we all join the Birdie Bogey Bus first?
Whichever, yeah. Mix it up. Let's go RBC first. We'll do Birdie Bogey Bus in a bit.
Well, all my Birdie Bogey Bus apart are all
Let's
to, do,
that,
to do with the RBC.
Let's go into it.
Go
that
on.
Time again.
Let's go. It's that time again, y'all. The Birdie Bogey Bus. The Birdie Bogey Bus. Birdie Bogey. But what's your birdie?
Right, you know, we love Tommy, don't we? I picked him this week in my fantasy. So gutted to see Tommy not get that win over the line. But my birdie's got to be that putt for Eagle.
Oh,
man.
Mate, same.
Your home open, 72 feet, the longest putt he's ever held.
That's first, the kicker, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like,
they never go in.
Like, but he's never held on that long, and then he does it in a playoff to win when Tommy is 1,000,000%. Like, that's three-putt territory, that.
It is, yeah.
Tommy's 1,000,000% holding it. And do you know what? If that doesn't hit the hole, that's a good 6-7 foot, maybe even 10 foot by.
Yeah, because of the way it slopes past the hole.
And how fast it was going. It went in quick, didn't it?
Yeah.
But when you look at it from one angle, from a bird's eye, from the side, it looks relatively straight. But when you watch it from the other angle,
yeah,
it's an absolute
right, yeah.
breaker.
That's what I mean. It's coming round that slope, isn't it? Yeah. Honestly, like 72 foot for Eagle to win your home open in front of the crowds, and the crowds were rowdy at that point to see them running across fairways to go from
yeah
every,
to get to the 9th and back to the 18th.
Back to the
yeah.
18th, yeah. So like that's they wanted that so much, and you know that brings me onto my bogey as well, because that is what a home open should really be about. Do you know what I mean?
I've been thinking the not the British Open, but the English Open should be as rowdy as that.
Well, the British Masters at the Belfry this year. Do
yeah.
you know what I mean? That's the home open. Like,
they should have it right a big stadium around the 10th, shouldn't they? Or
yeah,
around
Well, it should be mandatory for you to play in your home open, I think.
Yeah.
I think they should make it mandatory.
They should be proud to win it. They only play if they're hosting it.
I know that's like the first time in, obviously, was it 59 or 69?
69 years
since the Canadians won the Canadian Open. But, like, that is what can happen.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so if you've got, like, the British Masters and you say to every English player, you know, the Scottish Open or Irish Open, like, those players have got to play mandatory. You've got to support your home open, your home event. Imagine,
yeah.
like, the crowds will come out to see you. And I know a lot of them do. But
not really.
I think
to a certain extent.
They
do, yeah, of course. Not like that.
No.
Like, exactly the same point I've been thinking this all day. The Irish Open, even if they're the Northern Irish Open, they have the Welsh Open, the English Open, and the Scottish Open. The Scottish is a bit bigger because it's a Rolex. Them five events should have they should all be Rolex events, and they should all be massively ticketed
stadiums.
Towards stadiums and that sort of atmosphere. Because,
yeah.
like, I know the Americans
Adelaide
are like,
and Phoenix have proven that concept works.
Exactly. But then you've got obviously the Americans who like a bevy and all that, but the English love a bevy, mate.
Yeah.
They will be launching beer cans all over the place. Like, they could get that place
the Australians
on wheels.
As well, didn't
yeah,
they?
Exactly.
You know, I think anywhere you go in the world,
just it needs to be geared up to be more like the alliance, the strategic alliance with the other tour, that the where they pump the money and put the stands and get the fans and the atmosphere involved, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's my bogey. It's, you know, that is what all your home opens could be like.
And I
know it's more difficult for the PGA Tour to have like a home open because, you know, all their events in America, so you can't have an American Open. But you have got the US Open.
That was
Open,
born
you?
There, wasn't it? Like, that's Phoenix. That's where it was, like, stadium golf was originated, which is that's what they've done that. They don't need a home open. They have the US Open, obviously, but they don't need that atmosphere because they've already got that event out of, like, don't know how who even started that concept, but it just, it's grown arms and legs, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's always Super Bowl weekend as well, so everyone's like,
exactly, yeah.
Yeah. What was your bogey?
My bogey is, what was that security guard up to? What is he up to, him tackling
Hadwin? One of the best things ever. Because, like, it's not as though he's coming over with aggressively to, like, throw the bottle at him. He's got the champagne bottle and he's about to squirt. And I'm like, the crowds don't come on the green with champagne bottles, do they?
Yeah, but it wasn't even like a, don't do that, mate. It was like a full-on
spear.
Goldberg spear out the wrestling, wasn't it?
Was, yeah.
Tackled him to the ground.
So funny, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's my bogey. Like, just what is he thinking there, him?
It's half a bird there as well, because it was so good.
I know, yeah, I know, yeah. I know. Yeah, what's your bust?
Well, I mentioned my bust before, didn't it? Just how, like, crazy golf has gone at the moment. And, you know, I think the main thing is, like, Rory's, like you mentioned it perfectly before, is he's getting a bit too emotionally involved in it.
Yeah.
And I understand he's trying to support his tour, but, like, I don't know too much. I'm hearing reports that, like, you know, the PGA Tour have merged with PIF, not with LIV.
Sweet. One of the things you read, it's like LIV's its own thing. It's looking out for blue chip sponsors. It's going from strength to strength. It's all tied up till 2025. It's going nowhere. And another thing you read, it's like Monaghan's got the ability to shut LIV down if he wants to take it all away.
That's what I've read,
It's like any sort of data and statistics and news channels, like whatever they want to sell you as the agenda to get the clickbait and to get the stories, they're selling, I think, because there's too much conflict in this.
Nobody really knows.
Until it happens, I don't think it's going to, no one knows,
That's it, and it's like, you know, people wanting compensating, like I mentioned before, for turning down LIV. Like you say about, like, John Rahm getting compensated for turning down LIV, but how much money has he already won? Like, why does John Rahm need more? Why does, if we're talking about potential...
Well, Kepka didn't really need it, did he? But I know what you're saying. He took a risk and they went over.
That's my point. Yeah, they took a risk and they went over. You know, John Rahm, as well, potentially played it safe by saying, I'm not going over, or he's being loyal, whatever he's done. But he's still being loyal and being the best player in the world for a stretch of time. Got back to world number one, won the Masters, won shitloads of money. Mm-hmm. So it's not like he's lost all these opportunities and he needs compensating. And I just think the fact that they're coming out and saying, like, these players are going to get compensated. But then what about, like, that's just like the rich getting richer. What about the guys who, like, you know, are struggling a bit further down at all? Why compensate the top players? You don't
need it. Well, I think the thing that I read said anyone that didn't go, or maybe it's anyone that didn't go who's offered big money that is going to get an equity stake, not like anyone.
That's what I mean. So if you've
like,
if
you Wesley Bryant and
if you got offered $200 million to go and you stayed, and, you know, in that 12 months you've earned 50-60 million. All right, I know it's an extra 150 million. It's a lot of money, but you're not short of cash. You've stayed because you've made a decision to stay and LIV. Players who've gone, all right, you know, whether they've gone for the right reasons or not. Harald Varner was very open about, like, his reasons to go was to secure his family.
Yeah.
You know, other players have gone over. Like, you know, did Brooks go over because he was injured? He wanted to play less golf. Were a couple of players going over because they were coming to the end of the career and they've already got a name, so they took that final paycheck. You know, there's all different concepts. But then you've got, like, players like Eugenio Chicara, who hasn't even played a professional event on the PGA Tour, and he's won on LIV.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? It's like the massive risks. He's not going to be able to play.
Of course, yeah.
DP World Tour. He's not going to be able to play. The Ryder
Great
Cup.
If he, like, comes back in and just, like, settles in the PGA Tour.
Rahm's been open, hasn't he, about, like, he wants to see Garcia play on the...
Well, that's not really come out about Rahm's offer, but then it's 300 million to play, plastered all over the place.
Yeah. Interesting. What's your buzz?
Tommy's playing the last there.
In regulation play?
What? Oh. Do you know what? There was a lot made of his bag setup. He's got no club that can go 240. So that's why he was hitting iron off the tee. His little driver, his little burner driver thing goes like 260 or 270.
He's got the 5-wood as well, hasn't he?
And then he's got a 5-wood. He said, like, I don't know, a few things were saying, like, the way he plays, obviously he birdied every day in the other 3 days, so it's not really like he doesn't know how to play that hole. And he birdied it in the playoff as well. But
first playoff hole as well, like, if you look at where the second shot went with the 5-woods, it was enough club, wasn't it? It was iron 5-woods, pin eye, basically.
Yeah, but how can we just not hitting, like, 5-wood iron?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, it's not like, I know it was his last iron went in the trap on the left, but where Hadwin was hitting, Taylor was hitting his wood two, was a bit further down the right.
Yeah.
And it was, he just had less club in, didn't he? Like, Tommy had like 280 in it, one of the holes.
Yeah, I mean, what was it, 499, wasn't it, par 5?
But the same shot twice, isn't it?
Yeah.
Your little 250 shot twice, that's like,
yeah.
I don't know, like, the on one hand, you can't...
Well, how did he play it the first 3 days? Was it iron off the tee every day?
I don't know, I didn't catch it.
No. So, yeah, so if he's it... Do you know what? Like, I think he even said in his interview after he'd finished, because obviously it was well-publicised, one, he blocked his first one, blocked his second one, and he's done well to make a 5 and even get in the playoff in the end.
That putt was trying, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was trying. But I think... The way he played it in the playoff to make the birdie was obviously how he would have wanted to play it the first time. So I don't think tactically it was wrong. I just think...
No, but I'm saying a lot was made of it on the telly. They were saying, like, he had his bag set up. He's Taylor's more equipped to play this hole with the way he's got his bag set up.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know what? I can see that point to a certain degree, but the lad needs to birdie 18 to win the tournament, so his bag couldn't have been that wrong.
Oh, of course, yeah. Of course. And he's like, his stats... Well, speaking like, from himself over the...
Led the field, put on, led the field, strokes gained around the green.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
I don't know, just literally, like, Tommy, like, just not finishing with 3 in a row there to take his first PGA title just would have been unbelievable, wouldn't it?
Yeah. It's coming. Yeah, it's definitely coming. You can see, obviously, he's working with Butch Harmon now, isn't he?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Working with Butch.
I seen that. I only knew when he said on the thing. I didn't know it prior.
Since February, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if they've kept it a secret or whatever, but yeah, he's been working with Butch Harmon for a while now. And, you know, I can't see that his swing has changed much, but his persona on the course seems to have changed. I know he went a bit on 18, didn't he, in regulation play. You could see it in his eyes and his face that it sort of did get to him, the... hitting the shot, but that's what golf does to you. We spoke about We spoke about it last week, didn't we, at the Memorial when who was in the playoff with Hovland?
Denny McCarthy.
Yeah, so he'd hadn't made a bogey all day.
Pressure is a big thing.
Yeah.
Like, obviously Taylor had the world on his shoulders, but then I think the manner in which Taylor done it, like birdied that the last with that putt walking backwards as the putt was dropping in, big swinger, and then the manner when Tommy come down, like I always felt the edge was with Taylor because of the momentum side of things.
Yeah.
But then when Tommy held that birdie putt, put the pressure straight back on Taylor.
Yeah,
and he knocks that 5-footer in. As soon as they go to the par 3 again. Or the par 3 for the first time. Taylor's shot bounces out the rough, and although he gets unlucky because the putt jumps, Tommy's pit shot, if that just hops forward,
it could go in. Yeah.
It could go in.
Probably and puts it stone dead, doesn't
and
it?
And he
spins back just so enough that he can't get a mark on yeah, it. And it's wet.
I know. The rain as well might change the conditions, and I just think Taylor just adapted and just fair play to him, you know what I mean?
It's one of them, isn't it? Like, you can never... Like, if you give... It reminded me of John Rahm's putt when he held that big snake to win the tournament a couple of years back.
US Open?
Was it the US Open one?
When he went birdie-birdie?
Yeah, it was the US Open, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
When he held that big snake. It was Like, if you put John Rahm back there and give him another 50 balls, he probably doesn't hold.
Oh, no, you're talking about the one where he beat DJ.
I can't remember. It was 2 years ago, but it was off the back of the green, and it was a massive putt, and it just...
Yeah, no, because the one way on the US Open was a bit shorter than that, but he finished birdie, two clutch putts to win the US Open. But I think the one you're talking about is where he's dead... It's a few years before that again.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a bit skinnier looking, yeah, and he holds a snake again.
Yeah.
That was when I think that was in the... What was that in?
Was it Daniel Palmer or something? Yeah, like that,
or something.
Wasn't it?
It was around, no, I don't think Daniel Palmer, because it's not. What, maybe the Honda or something.
Was it?
Because it was Daniel Palmer, that Bale. It wasn't Bale, was it?
Oh, no, wasn't.
Well, I know what you're talking about. I mean, exactly the same, but it was like, it's just phenomenal, wasn't it, really?
Possible putt, yeah. I mean, one of the best, I know I mentioned it before, but one of the best finishes to a tournament. It's like, it's exactly what the PGA Tour needs at this point. Obviously, under a lot of scrutiny, a lot of like debating going on between players and everything like that. But as a tour that you hold open, like for the fans to turn out the way they did, it was packed.
First time at that event as well. Obviously, remember you said last week they've had a few other events, but it's never hosted the Canadian Open. And no. It, like, what a venue. Look, Boston.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, there was a lot of people scrutinising 18 because of how short it was as a finishing hole. But I think like the undulation and, you know, when you got to the green, it was a big, massive rise up to the green.
But even like
it?
Tommy, you can't just bang driver. And if it's 499, you can hit driver.
There's a big ditch as
drive
well.
Drive a 6-iron, couldn't you, really? Yeah. But
well, there's a big ditch right in the middle with loads of rough, isn't there?
So that's what I'm saying. It's tactically set up
well.
That's the one. That's the word.
And you can even see it. You have a bit of a slight push. Tommy struggled on that hole. And then, you know, fast forward to the fourth playoff hole when he pulls it into the bunker. Same thing, isn't it? You
exactly.
Know
what I mean? Yeah,
you're
well placed.
Yeah.
Length's not everything. Like, it's sometimes it's a good bit of architecture and as you say, a bit more tactical thinking about it, but...
No, but it was a fantastic event.
Just talking about Tommy there, obviously, as you said then, number one, strokes gained putting round the green, strokes gained total, 10th off the tee, but he was 31st in approach to the green this week.
Yeah.
So he was topping everything apart from his approach play.
Yeah, sometimes that happens, doesn't it? When you do so well around the green and you're competing, it's probably because you're not hitting it.
Exactly, yeah.
As close. So,
yeah, but even just like I've seen Kenyon putting a post about it, number one, putting like that's not Tommy, that is it, usually?
No, people have perceived him as being a poor putter, but it's always been because he knocks it so close.
Yeah.
Bit of a Scotty Scheffler type.
Exactly what I was just thinking.
You know, he puts it so close, so you don't see it in his scoring and his positioning and probably his strokes game putting as a statistic isn't that bad and doesn't look that bad. But because he used to miss a lot of shorter putts, it was sort of like Tommy could have won this by a mile if he'd knocked a few putts in.
And also the coverage doesn't do Tommy any favours. Like we always say, the coverage, like if Tommy's like fifth or sixth, they only ever go to him when he's in close. And then if he misses a couple, the perception comes out that it's like,
yeah,
now Tommy's missing everything, but like he's 12, 15 under, it's like he's not really missing everything, is he? Like,
well, that's, and Tommy, if this is what I mean, you know, if he's 10th off the tee and he's putting and chipping so well, you've got to think he's got a chance this week.
1,000,000%.
Because getting the ball from tee to green is, again, it's a
well,
real...
Well, have you seen the rough? Like, obviously, yeah, we'll come on to it, but the rough is... It's
no mess.
People doing them ball drops, but it's like it's a good ball under the...
Grass.
Like, height, yeah. Daylight. It's a good ball away from daylight. Like, a good outing by the English this week as well. There was four English in the top eight.
Yeah.
Justin Rose, Aaron Wright, Tommy Fleetwood and Tyrrell Hatton.
Yeah. There was, yeah, very good turnout by
which
them,
is, yeah.
In Ryder Cup here, that's exactly what you want to see.
Exactly.
John Rahm winning the Masters, Victor Hovland doing what he's doing. You know, Matt Fitzpatrick's coming back this week to defend, even though he hasn't been playing that well. He did win the RBC, actually, didn't he?
Yeah.
The Heritage. So, you know, but he's just had a bit of a dip in form recently, not being competing that well. But
Rory's a worry, isn't he? Like the way he's had them two final rounds. Obviously, his wedge play was horrific. And this week,
it's the wedge
got
play,
he got nothing going yesterday.
He needs to go and see Hardy, doesn't he?
He does. Nothing going yesterday at all.
Only
two backs that in the day.
Just off the tee, just puts himself in such good positions every time, doesn't he?
I know.
He's got like a little flick into the green, and he misses the green long or left, and you're like, what's going on?
He needs to take
on
them risks, don't we? That's what he needs to do.
Definitely.
No,
yeah.
MH special.
No, and then you've got Ludvig Åberg as well, haven't you? I know we'll come on to the Scandinavian mixed, but, you know, he's played his first event as a tour player now, hasn't he? Because he got his for finishing number one in the university rankings, and not only did he make the cup, but he had a decent, strong finish, didn't he?
And yeah, definitely.
He's definitely one to look out for, isn't he? And you've got...
I think he was number one in driving accuracy as well.
Was he?
Yeah.
Yeah, and Sam Bennett as well. You know, he done very well at the Masters, didn't he? He was leading. You know, he got another start. I think he finished top 20, I think it was, yeah.
It's a good outing though, isn't it? Like, good bit of money for him, gets him, kicks him on, doesn't
it? But this is, yeah, they're saying like the next generation of golfers, if you look at him and you look at Sam Bennett and things coming through from amateur transition to
professional. It's like Hovland was there a few years ago, Scheffler was there a few years ago. Like, it's, they're all ready to come through, aren't they? They just,
there's no end to the talent.
There's no end to the talent at all, no.
Well, what about the Scandinavian mix then?
Yeah, well, do you know what the maddest thing? There's a couple of mad takeaways from the Scandinavian mix. Cool. Obviously, great event. Dale Whitnall won it, which is brilliant. But
emotional.
There was like four hole-out eagles. Whitnall had one on the 18th of the regular, of the first day. Sorry, slapped like a bounce and spun back and went in. There was a slam dunk by a young girl. Can't remember her name. Who had a mum on the bag. That was like emotional scenes. But then Mike Dean, the referee,
yeah,
he was caddying for Lydia Hall at this event.
Yeah.
Mad. Didn't know that.
Yeah, I don't know if he always caddies for Lydia Hall, but he does do a bit of caddying.
Well, he used to be on the bag for Sophie Walker.
Did he?
Yeah. And then I was watching this thing. I've watched it a couple of times. The weird and wonderful shots from the event. And they just show all like mad stuff that happens. Norrin like takes all his shoes and socks off, gets like in the water, splashes one out to like 30 foot, rolls it in, and then when it flicks to Gabs Carly and she's on top of a rock and then just like fluffs it half like it's the back of the club against the rock, goes to there, pitches it up to like 20 foot and then knocks it in. I was just like, what is going on here? But then in the water on the back of one of the holes, there was this like mad family that were like floating on a barge, like just like
watching it,
just watching like. Like,
just the one where he's hitting the putt and he just jumps.
He jumps in the water, yeah. And then Yannick Paul throws his ball. And then, like, he puts it down on, like, this cloth and tries to, like, hit it back to him and, like, shank knobs it into the water. Oh, like, I was thinking, like, what? Like, and then the camera went to them and, like, the barge is, like, half starting to sink because something's gone wrong. And they're all just, like, sitting there watching the golf. And, like, they're like, they don't seem to be very panicked about this. I was like, what are they doing here?
Yeah, I know. Like, yes, but as you say, though, Dale Whitnall. That's his first win, isn't it?
Yeah.
On the DP World Tour. Obviously emotional for him, won it. But Yannick Paul had a good...
Another one. Yeah, he's
up to 12th now. He's moved up five places, up to 12th in the DP World Tour standing. So he's in prime position to get himself that PGA Tour card. And Anne Van Damme, highest ranked female as well.
Yeah, well, there's no surprise that Van Damme's up there. Because when I was caddying for Yana in Saudi, she played with Van Damme. And the way she, how far she
miles,
hit
yeah.
She's a good 40, 50 yards past
where
the other girls were. Mm. But that, we're just on Whitnall there, 14 years and 106 events it took him to get that. And he's 32.
Yeah.
No, he's 34, so he must
have... This is what's mad about golf, innit? Like, he's turned a corner the past 18 months or 2 years, hasn't he? And you've started to see his name up there and competing a bit more, and a win like that can do wonders for you. I'll say, just look at Richard Bland. I know he was a bit older and his story was a bit more emotional than Dale Whitnall's, but like, you know,
just keep going, innit?
Yeah. But the same thing with like someone like Matty Baldwin as well. You know, Matty qualified on the Challenge Tour. Was last shot, or last putt or something, when he got the last spot and then goes on this year. Wins on the DP World Tour. He's obviously mid-30s, isn't he? And then... Like, hasn't looked back since, and he had another good strong finish this year, and you know, you could end up seeing him in the top 10 and getting on the
a million %
on the DP World Tour, on the PGA Tour.
When we done the podcast with him, he was like, I feel like I'm getting back, but I'm nowhere near where I feel like I should be or where I want to be, which is like, just shows you just keep plugging away. Like, well,
they are inspirational stories, aren't you? Just before we move on to the US Open and reviewing that and doing our picks for the fantasy, I just wanted to give a shout out for Hugo Townsend, the Swedish amateur.
Quality on it. Closed with a 64 there to finish 11th on his own. That's brilliant, isn't it?
When I was reading about him, his dad, Townsend Senior, who represented GB and Ireland in the Ryder Cup in 1969
and 1971. Definitely do not.
No. Peter Townsend.
No, I don't remember. Remember we've done all the Ryder Cups, like, but my memory's evading me.
Yeah, he won 5 times in the European Tour. So, and that Hugo said that's the first time that his dad's watched him in 5 years.
Why, like, too nervous or just...
No, I just think, yeah, he's over in America playing in college. I just don't think his dad's been... Well, it's his first ever professional tournament, isn't it?
Right.
At Hugo, so... Yeah, I think his mum's Swedish and obviously his dad is English. Obviously, he's took the nationality off his mum.
Nice.
So, yeah, top Swedish amateur. You just look at Ludvig, another Swede.
Yeah, Swedish golf's well. On the rise, isn't it?
Doing well, yeah.
Just two more takeaways from this Scandinavian mix. 3 girls in the top 5. That's obviously a girl won this last year, but it's good to see, like, obviously Gabs Carly and Van Dam up there and to close out the top 5.
Yeah.
And then Alexandra Knapp, he had a hole in one on the 14th and he got a 2-year Care by Volvo subscription to an electric Volvo car. And then, like, just speaking after it, like, I couldn't believe, like, when he was saying, he's like, it's unbelievable because my car is actually breaking down. He said, I have a 9-year-old car and the engine is not really running. Sometimes it takes 5 minutes to get running and the AC is broken. So I was looking for a car anyway. This is perfect timing. I was like, he's right.
Does he normally play challenging or does he get his card?
Not too sure.
Dutch guy, any? Is he Dutch?
No, he's German.
Oh, German. Yeah, Alexander Knapp, yeah.
I'm not too sure.
He played Challenge Tour last year. I don't know whether he got his card. I haven't seen much of him this year on the DP World Tour, but...
No.
Yeah, he's been around for a while, hasn't he?
Not too sure on his age or anything. I just know that he hasn't got a very good car.
What was the other takeaway then?
That was it. The girls in the top 5 and the hole-in-one. So it's major time.
It is major time, yeah. And I'm making major moves in this fantasy, mate. Up major to 4th moves. In the overall standings I am now.
Where am I?
I got 210 points this week. You have stayed 12th.
Oh.
You're on 665 points. I've moved up now to 810 points.
I need 25 points and you've just gained another 100 odd on me there.
Yeah, I had a good week. I'm not going to lie. Rich Healy led the points tally again. RBC Canadian Open.
What, highest point scorer highest at the top of the board?
And he was already at the top of the board. 250 points he got, so he's now on 1,180 points. He's got a 320-point lead at the top over Michael Dahl. Now, if we look at the June order of merit, we've obviously got the US Open this week, and Stephen Dahl is leading that one on 400 points. Then you've got Kyle Taggart on 370, Rich Healy on 355, Gary Lee on 335, Michael Dahl on 295, alongside me, you're on 215. So you're 80 behind me at the moment for this month.
I've got an ace up my sleeve this week.
Should we get into it then? The 2023 US Open.
It's the 123rd US Open as well. Los Angeles Country Club. It's underwent a 5-year restoration project to bring it back to its roots.
Okay.
And it's 7,423 yard past 70, so it's a bit of a beast.
Yeah.
And then there was a couple of the fella who wrote this article that I was reading spoke to a real estate agent and said, like, could you value this piece of land because of where it's situated? It's like...
Yeah, Beverly Hills, that was it, yeah.
And he reckons it's in the billions, if you took that for real estate. It's in the billions, that what it's worth. He said, like, there's no other place like this, only sort of golf terrain like this would be like London or Tokyo.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's meant to be, it's a heavy...
Used to host the LA Open, didn't it, back in the day? It hasn't hosted a professional tournament since 1940, so there's not a lot to go on. As you say, there's since the restoration 5 years ago, they did host the 2017... Walker Cup, which was Morikawa and Scotty Scheffler's team.
Yeah.
He won the Walker Cup, didn't he, that year? But again, there's not real much to go off apart from the fact that, you know, it's an unbelievable golf course. It's ranked 16th best course in America from Golf Digest. So it's got some unbelievable views, like you've just mentioned there in California. You said before as well, the video circulating where how thick the rough is. TT Green is going to be the one, isn't it? Yeah.
But what's happened as well, the way it's set up, like the corporate support has been astounding for like what the US Open wants to get the tickets. But because the way that the course is routed because there's like a court. I think there's two courses there, but they've like routed them differently. I don't know how they've done it, but they reckon there's only 22,000 fans on site. There's only 22,000 tickets, and then 5,000 like service staff and marshals, etc., media. And then it also says that there's only 4,500 daily passes available for the public.
That's a bit shit, isn't it?
It's heavy, that, isn't it? I know, I couldn't believe that when I read that.
Yeah, it's not going to be much of an atmosphere there then, is there?
No. It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, because you're normally getting 60,000, 70,000 a day, aren't
you? Yeah, out of the 22,000, most of them are corporate affiliates, associates of members. And then, so like,
because
they're
of how prestigious the land is, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on, but something to do with the limitation on the way, like, the crossings and the way it all works. So, yeah, there's only like 4,500 tickets available for the public. Mad one, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like when you try and get a ticket for Wembley, and you know, as Blues, you don't get to go there that often, but there are only
all the corporates going, only a small
amount in it. It's like, it's your football club, you want to go and watch it.
Exactly,
don't
I know.
It's disappointing that for a major, I didn't know that. 156 in the field, obviously one guy who won't be there, Taylor Gooch. I know we mentioned it a couple of weeks ago, but he changed the qualifying criteria, so he missed out, didn't he? And then Woods, Zalatoris and Berger also qualified, but obviously not healthy enough to compete. So Matt Fitzpatrick returning to defend his US Open.
Yeah. Do you know what? As well, the way they've set up the golf course, they've got the 11th hole, which is a par 3, playing 290 yards. But then they've also got the 15th hole, which has got a 43-yard green. So it can play as short as 72 yards. It can play as long as 155 yards.
Yeah.
So it's like it's like a proper mess with your mind sort of hole. Like, pretty interesting when the way they set that up. If they have a 72-yard hole, imagine that.
I know.
And then you play a 290 a couple of holes later.
But that's the one that's surrounded by all the bunkers as well, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like, it's got a big bunker on the right-hand side. It's like a big teardrop green.
Yeah.
Which is, I thought it was interesting.
You know what, I'm looking forward to watching it. But like, you know, we said before at the Canadian Open, you want to see atmosphere, don't you? And it's proper.
Hopefully the corporates get the jolly on.
Yeah.
Get a good.
I'm just thinking, I know they'll have a good time, exactly, but I'm just thinking, having 25,000 people there opposed to having 60,000 people there a day, it's going to be a big difference, isn't it?
Massive, yeah. Massive.
Yeah. Shall we get into it then, our picks for the week?
Go on then, brother.
So, I've just gone on form again because we haven't really got that much like to go off on the course, and you don't really know like what style of play is going to win. I've just gone basically off form. So, pot one, I've gone Victor Hovland.
Yeah, fair enough. I thought you were going to say Tommy then.
Well, no, I've been calling Victor out for a while, haven't I? Obviously won the Memorial, second at the PGA, seventh at the Masters. Form's fantastic. And I do think that there is a major. I mean, obviously I'm going to pick him for the Open, but this could be his week, this. What have you gone for?
So I've gone for a different approach this week.
Go on.
I've gone for the Live Brigade.
Every pot?
Yeah, well, there's no Live in pot four, so I had to switch that up. But
have you gone for one?
I've gone for, do you know, I was tossing up between, obviously, Smith and Brooks. But I went for Brooks, obviously, first and second in the last two majors. I believe he's single-handedly changed the face of golf by winning that major. And I just think he'll shake it all up again by getting the job done again. Tee to green, he's got it all, hasn't he?
Yeah, he is.
And
he's playing very well.
He's won five majors, so.
Yeah.
No one at I think he's like 11-1 third favourite or something.
Yeah. So you can see why, can't you?
Of course, yeah.
Pot two, I've gone Ryan Fox.
Right. Interestingo.
Yeah, well, he's new to the PGA Tour, isn't he? Obviously had an unbelievable season last year on the DP World Tour. 41st in the world still. He's made 7 out of 8. Cuts on the PGA Tour this season.
He hasn't really been about though, has he?
He hasn't finished outside the top 30.
Yeah, but he's not like the Sunday watching him in your living room, is he?
No, he's definitely not that yet. But you know, there's always the US Open to change that.
Yeah, hopefully this not. Week. I've gone for Phil Mickelson.
You know, yeah, keeping with the Live Brigade. Just gonna get his grand slam if he wins this, isn't it?
150-1 he is. Obviously, his short game's unreal, which everyone knows. He's got all the trick shots in he's got the gutsy shots in the book. So, a few of them flop shots out that rough that are going to be needed.
Seems to have his mojo back as well.
And that is exactly what I've wrote there. Obviously, his Masters performance, he was second. He made the cut of the PGA, but I think he finished about 10 over, didn't he? 58. But his motivation after he's like spearheaded this whole merger and it's all come out and took a weight off him. Six majors has he got? Like, he's...
This is it. This is the only one eluding him, isn't it? The US Open, the only one he hasn't won. So we always talk about, obviously, Rory getting the Masters and completing the Grand Slam. But yeah, this is Phil's chance. And at the age of, what is he, 51, 52 now? Be some story, won't it, when you consider the year he's had.
He's winning two majors in past 50. He's like... Yeah.
Some going.
Brilliant. But I'm just looking for him to make the cut, to be honest. But go on.
Sam Bennett, I've gone for pot three. New to the scene as well. Obviously, he was leading at the Masters.
Interesting that he's pot three, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, he had a good knock last week. Finished 20th at the RBC Canadian Open. 16th at the Masters. He's made all three cuts that he started in the PGA Tour this season. Obviously, very raw.
Can you?
Very raw. But every time that he's been given the opportunity and the challenge, he's...
Well, he was talking about, like, can you win the Masters? He's like, yeah, he's obviously got the confidence, he's got the game, so yeah. Why not?
Definitely, yeah. What do you want for?
So, keeping with the live theme, it was either Martin Kaymer or Carlos Ortiz, and I just think that when I was looking at a few of the stats from the last stats available, like, he was 12th in putting average, 65th in strokes gained, 47th in off the tee, and 33rd in total driving. He's 11th in the live standings. I just think that he was a better pick than Kaymer, and it was slim pickings because he only had two to go from.
So you gone for Ortiz?
It's Carlos Ortiz, yeah. 350 to one he is.
My final pick in pot four is Ryan Gerrard. I picked him last week. He was in pot three last week. Obviously, I mentioned as well last week that he got his special temporary membership along with Nicolai Højgaard. So, yeah, I just think overall in general, you know, he's playing well, finished 43rd last week, and in his rookie season as a pot four, he's definitely got a chance of making the cut this week.
1,000,000%. And I was looking at the odds as well. There's a massive jump between Ryan Gerrard and the next odds. It's like a good 500 to one more.
Nice.
To the rest of them. But I've gone for someone who you met, obviously will have heard of from years ago, but he's gone missing a bit. And I was just surprised to actually see him in the field. He's become the youngest ever winner of a Japanese event of 15 years, 8 months in 2007.
Oh, yeah.
He turned pro in 2008 and he was the youngest player ever to make the world top 100. And on the 2nd of May, he shot a 12 under par 58 to win a tournament by 5 strokes. Ryo Ishikawa.
Yeah, he had all the
2,500 to 1. He used to have his face. He used to wear a visor. He used to have his face on the ball. Like, he was doing that before TaylorMade even like thought of that.
Do you know what? He did have the world at his feet when he jumped onto the scene. So we talked about it before, didn't we? You know, Dale Whitnell's story and Richard Bland's story. Sometimes it takes a while, but all it takes is a week.
Week. Like, he shot 58 and he's... Maybe it was just all like a Macaulay Culkin, all just a little bit too much too early. Like, he just needed to go and have a little 10 to himself, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So I don't know how he qualified or what he's been doing for the last 20 years, but... Hopefully he's been practicing anyway.
No, yeah, I was looking forward to it as always. Oh, the third major of the year.
It gets a bit sad though now, doesn't it?
Why?
Because then, like, there's one more, and then, like, and then you've got a few more months, and then it gets back into winter, then you're like, oh, what?
Yeah.
Where'd that go?
That's Liv's saving now, innit? Liv's until November.
Really for us.
Oh, for us, yeah. Yeah. You've only got a couple more weeks to try and catch me as well.
I know.
Yeah, but the weather's being boss, isn't it?
Amazing.
Over here. What have you got planned this week then? Are you golf-wise?
So I'm just gonna try and get down a couple of times, get the range, really embed what David's all. I know what David's been teaching me, he's been telling me for 10 years,
yeah.
And really, really try to hone in the chipping technique, the pitching technique, and then if I play any holes, I'm gonna lay back every time. I'm not gonna go for any par four and two. I'm gonna pitch one up, and then I'm gonna practice me pitching. And really try and hone that in and see if I can start taking that to competition golf. That's my plan.
That's it.
So get down and see him yourself and have a little, see what he's chatting about your technique.
Yeah, I will do. Definitely.
There you go, Hardy. There's another little 35 quid for you there, mate.
And on that note, we'll see you all soon.
Ciao.
Ladies and gentlemen.